Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Cordy, and I am running for public advocate to ban vaccines in 2013. The guest I have on today is going to be running for public advocate also for the Green Party, and I'm interested to hear about his platform. There has been something that has been brought to my attention by people who are concerned for me. They sent a photograph of a poster that says that they will be releasing gases in the New York City subways and throughout the five boroughs during the month of July, weekdays from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. Well, there was also two articles written in the New York Times about this, the first one in April, and in April they stated that it was going to be on three non-consecutive days and just in the subway. I believe there was no pushback. Nobody was saying, I don't consent to this, which is what we have to say. And so the next article was in May, on May 14th, written by Jim Dwyer, who I believe I went to high school with. Anyway, he wrote it as fair notice that there will be gases in and above the subway, and the dates by then were every weekday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. throughout the month of July. So this is very startling to me that within a month's time, or possibly less, it went from three non-consecutive days to every weekday within the subway and above the subway. So I have already spoken out. I've already called my local legislator because it was said it was from the New York Police Department. So I called the city councilwoman who represents me and said, I need you to represent that I do not consent to this. I'm calling you. But however, what I have found out subsequently is that the funding, $3.4 million that is funding that project, has been given to the police department by Homeland Security. So that takes it to a different level. So this is something we must talk about, and I expect to be introducing this issue to my caller, James Lane. He is running for New York City public advocate for the Green Party, and I'm about to pick him up now. James?
I'm here. You hear me? Hi, do you hear me?
Hi, James. Welcome, and happy Father's Day to you.
Well, thank you very much. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Rightio. And how many kids do you have, James?
Just have one kid, but he's like having 12. He's a lot to deal with.
Does he take the subways with your wife?
We take different modes of transportation. Most of the time, the subways, yes, and friends will drive or something like that. But yeah.
Well, the reason I bring this up is I am very concerned as a parent about the gases they are going to be releasing into the subway and above the subway throughout the five boroughs, 21 subway lines, they said. And I called everybody from the Green Party to inform them, everyone I knew, Tom Syracuse, who's the New York, I believe, director of the Green Party, and, of course, Julia Willebrand, who I believe is running for controller for the Green Party, and Kolia. What is her last name?
Kolia Clark.
She formerly ran for Senate for the Green Party. So I called everybody I knew and said, please get active on this. And I wanted to bring this to your attention as well, especially not just because you're part of the Green Party, but you're a dad, and this is threatening the well-being of ourselves and our children.
Exactly. And, you know, personally, I've always had a lot of issues with the things that happen around the city that seem to have no real public interaction. For example, when we say that we want to have cell phone coverage throughout all the subway systems, you know, and there's really studies about, you know, these the electromagnetic radiation associated with cell phones. And, you know, there's studies that are out there just saying that it can cause, like, genetic mutations and whatever, but just people just keep pushing this. And there seems to be no debate. There's no opportunities for the public to get involved and say, we don't want this. You know, the gases is a prime example, too. It's like just pumping it. And they sort of do it under the cover of you know, lack of knowledge. You know, people in the general public, they'll know about this. And, you know, they know about all the movies, the crummy movies that are coming out because they see all the subway posters for that. But, you know, it'd be great if maybe they have a subway poster for, like, hey, guess how we're going to poison you this month, you know? So
it's a serious issue. I got two people who are not from New York City sent me a picture. Somebody had taken a cell phone picture, I guess, of this poster, and they got a hold of it and they sent it to me. And I was floored. And then I got other people sent me two articles from the New York Times, the second article stating this is fair notice. So fair notice means we have a window of opportunity here to respond. And if we don't want this, it's called perfluorocarbons. Perfluorocarbons is the gases that they will be releasing. And I want people to look up that word and understand what they will be speaking about. I want you to Google it and see what the effects on your health. And this is supposedly to see how gases move through the subways and out of the subways. They're going to be monitoring it in case of a weaponized anthrax attack or a radioactive attack. And I don't trust the contents of anything since vaccines, because those were a bill of goods sold to us that was a complete lie. They're 100% toxic. So I want people to take the responsible action of looking up for fluorocarbons and saying, do I want this released from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. throughout July on weekdays? My kids have to take the subway to school and to work, and I'm absolutely I'm against it completely.
Yeah, and actually, and I'm sorry, I was having troubles connecting initially, so I missed the first part of what was the reason that they were releasing these gases?
They're doing it as a terror drill in case of I have the poster here. Hold on. All right, here it is. The NYPD works for the best but plans for the worst when it comes to potentially catastrophic attacks such as ones employing radiological contaminants or weaponized anthrax. Well, a lot of things have transpired with fear as the modus operandi. And as I say, vaccines. The whole thing with vaccines is, aren't you fearful if you don't get a vaccine? I'm wildly fearful of the vaccine. But I know that now. I didn't know that then. I trusted what they said then. So I am very skeptical about anything that people tell me is harmless. So it's also
right.
Colorless. You won't be able to see it. I don't know if it's odorless. No, they say airborne non-toxic test.
Right.
It's a precaution against terror attacks. Stay calm. Oh, sure. Okay, let's all just sit back and let them test anything they want in the subways and above throughout the five boroughs. Sure, I'm good with that.
Right. And they don't mention anything about what's the chemical element of this harmless colorless gas, do they?
Well, in the April article, which is directly under the screen for the radio, they say it's perfluorocarbons.
Yeah.
So I'm asking people to do their research on perfluorocarbons, and if you find that this is something that is unacceptable, this is what they're telling us is in it anyway, then to speak out. Now, where could we speak out? I called the public advocate, okay? And mm-hmm. I said, I would like to report that I do not consent to gases being tested in the subways. And they said, call 311. And I said, well, the last time I called 311, they told me to call you. So I thought I'd go straight to you. But let me tell you, the last time I called 311, I was concerned about releasing the trailers after Hurricane Sandy. I thought that the people of Staten Island have lots of golf courses, and they could have put these trailers on the golf courses and given people shelter. It was cold, and they should not have had to have been cold. So I was able to get. They said I could have an appointment with the public advocate in June. I said, how after the fact is this? Are you kidding me? I'm talking about trailers to keep people warm, and I might be able to get an appointment in June?
That's unacceptable.
Well, it's June. Really, where's my appointment?
Exactly. That's one of the reasons I decided to run for public advocate, too, because, first of all, I'm just surprised to hear that you're actually able to get through to their system, because I've called numerous times over the last year on issues here and there, and you're either on the phone for like an hour if you choose not to leave a message, and if you do leave a message, you're lucky if somebody gets back to you. And then most of the time, as you mentioned before, it seems like if you call 311, that's actually where you should be calling. Just forget about going to the public advocate, because I don't understand what happened there.
Well, 311 directed me to the public advocate, you see?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
It's a runaround, and I know the public advocate's office was diminished in the fact that they lost 40% of their funding. Bloomberg and Quinn decided to reduce the public advocate's office by 40% in terms of funding. And it begs the question, if the public advocate is supposed to represent the public to the mayor and to the city council and to the governmental agencies, and their budget is controlled by the same people they're appealing to, how much autonomy does the public advocate have at all?
Exactly. You know, and so it's funny because it's kind of like the public advocate needs a public advocate. You know, it's like their resources have been slashed. They can't do anything. They're paralyzed. Yeah.
Well, what are the issues that you are running on? One of them is the cell phones, which is terrific. A lot of people don't realize that when you get down to one bar, your cell phone is like a time bomb. This is what I've read. What else do you know about cell phones?
Well, I mean, that's the whole joke. It's like, what does anybody know about cell phones? It depends on which country you go to. If you go overseas, they know a lot about cell phone and the effect of the electromagnetic radiation that they have on the human body, and especially on young children. I mean, it's such a shame. Like, I see these kids that are, you know, under the age of, like, five that are playing with cell phones, and their parents are letting them talk to their grandparents on their cell phones, and I'm just, like, cringing in horror. That it's like, don't you know what you're doing to your child's brain, you know, and Nobody has any concerns about it. You know, a lot of studies about the cell phones is that the bulk of that radio, you know, the radiation, the charges, happens when you're going from, you know, one transmitter to another, for example, one substation to another. So in a situation like a subway, when you're going from station to station to station, each one of these pulses of, you know, that electromagnetic field is passing through, and every passenger on the train is being affected by it. So that's one of my concerns, that there's just not enough in the States. You know, most of the cell phone studies are done by the cell phone companies, so it's kind of like, you know, you think they're going to give themselves a bad grade. Of course not. And so in the States, it's this whole level of acceptance that, you know, these things are good because we heard on the news that there was a study done by AT&T, the AT&T phones are good, and people accept it. You know, I've never been a person that just accepts facts that are coming to me that's been sponsored by the people that are probably the evildoers, you know. It's
right.
Really upsetting
right.
me. Yeah. You know.
Well, what are the issues? what other issues do you want to bring to the public's knowledge? What else are you fighting to stop or to promote?
Well, you know, there's a couple of issues that concern me a lot. You know, and there's some that may be considered outside of my jurisdiction, but I'll just tell you, let's make sure my phone didn't cut out. So one of my biggest issues was when I was 23 years old, both my parents died. They had pretty unhealthy situations that came. My father had throat cancer. You know, for like 5 years, I was watching him deteriorate. You know, they removed half of his jaw, gave him a trach. My mother had diabetes. You know, they cut off about three quarters of one of her legs because she'd gotten an infection, and turned out, you know, going to the doc in a box around the corner, and it's like, oh, just put some topical cream on it, it'll be okay. Then, you know, a couple of weeks later, she falls and finds out her leg is filled with gangrene, and so they have to remove her leg. So after all that trauma, you know, and they both died in 1988, after that trauma, and I'm taking care of all the financial stuff, lo and behold,
and how
I
old,
find...
How old were you in 1988?
Oh, I was 23. So, yeah,
okay.
So it's kind of much for a 23-year-old to watch. And my parents were kind of young at the time. They were only 53 and 55. And so seeing them, one, you know, being ravaged by these diseases, which, you know, and at that time, you know, food wasn't as bad and as toxic as it is nowadays. You know, there was just certain things they were doing, like they were both, there were some things by choice, like both being smokers and whatever, and that's another issue. But the meat of the story is that I was taking care of all their financial records and trying to close out their savings and their safe deposit box. And lo and behold, we open up the safe deposit box and we find adoption papers for a male Gamble. So I'm asking the auditor at the Surrey Court, what's a male Gamble? And he tells me, well, does your parents have any other boys? And I'm like, no. Well, then that's you. And so now I lost both of my parents, and then I found out like a few months later that I was adopted. And then so now it's my search.
Really? Oh, my Lord.
Exactly. So now my search for truth and justice begins because I'm like, okay, so and what's odd about this whole scenario is, so I'm in the surrogate court in downtown Manhattan, and I'm totally blown away. So I go and call my sister. She's 10 years older than me. She lives in Colorado. And I call her up and I said, what, I adopted? And she says, of course not. You know, I'm like, well, we found adoption papers for a male Gamble. And so she, over the phone, she says, oh, I always knew your name was Victor. So for 23 years, I've been lied to about who I really was and where I came from. And then, so now I'm put into this dilemma where to get certain things turned over to me so I can continue to be the executor of this estate for my parents. Now I have to prove that I am me once again. So I go and get some, like, you know, birth certificate information and whatever, and this kind of weird documentation. And then go back to the surrogate court office, and the guy goes, okay, fine. And he goes around the corner, maybe about like 20, 30 feet away in this other room, and comes back. It's like, okay, everything checks out. And I'm like, wait, so you mean to tell me there's some information telling me about my origins in this place that's 30 feet away, and everyone that works in this department can have access to it, but I can't? There's something really wrong with this situation. So, so for 24 years, I've been searching for my birth parents. And finally, January of this year, I was fortunate enough, thanks to the help of people in my circle, I found a great adoption support group that meets once a month. I met DMC for Run DMC, and he spoke to me about how he found it, and I was fortunate enough to find my birth mother and the whole family that comes along with her. You know, I have two half-sisters, cousins, aunts, and it's been just a beautiful thing. And there's a part of me that's going through a serious, I guess it would be like a survivor's guilt in the way of other people that are in my adoption support group that, you know, have been born, you know, that have been may have been adopted in New York, born in New York or whatever, that don't have access to this information. And no matter what, every door is getting slammed into their faces. Right now I'm a member of, not as active as I'd like to be, but this great adoptees rights group up in from New York State called the Unsealed Initiative. And they're like my true champions. They're out there fighting the fight, trying to do whatever they can do with the assembly. And speaking on this issue, that it's really the adoptees' rights to know about their origins, because there's so much that comes along with that. There's so much in finding out that, you know, you don't know where you come from and the damage that comes along with that. And a lot of people that don't understand, they sort of say, well, you know, don't you understand? You were chosen by these people, and you should appreciate that and love the fact that you grew up in a family that cared about you, and you were chosen, you're special. It's like, yeah, that's all fine and good, but they forget one important thing. I was lied to for 23 years. And
you were what? You were what for 23 years?
Yeah, I was lied to. There were with adoption.
Okay.
Yeah, with adoption, there's a certain level of secrets and lies and you know, all the stuff that comes along with it that people don't really realize. Sorry, my son just came into the room. So yeah.
So basically, I interviewed a gentleman who wrote a book called Courage Grows Strong at the Wound. And I find that this exact phrase applies to everybody who is getting active on specific issues. You are getting active on rights of adopted children to know their history, I presume, to know the legacy. I'm getting active on vaccines because my sister was severely vaccine injured, which I didn't even find out till I was 50. But because there's so many laws surrounding that issue, that the disinformation has, you know, left the whole family and with endless question marks. I never even knew she used to be normal. It never came up. Her behavior was so extraordinary once she was taken down by a vaccine, my mother really never spoke about her as a normal baby. So my mother figured it out through all the other children I was working with, and she said after her annual checkup, she looked away and never looked back. And she said, so your sister is vaccine injured, and she said it with such assurance for the first time in her life. Courage for me grows strong at the wound. I just am determined not to see if I can stop it, not to see another child without a future or dying before their time. Or, you know, it just hurts me to think that a child who is bright and who has a future and can communicate and can recognize someone who is their sister as their sister, really basic things, let alone an independent future. I just was determined not to see another child go down, and there are more and more everywhere I look because the increases in vaccines and the ever-growing mandates, this is causing our children to die and to be mentally retarded, and they're making it required for school. I'm like, great, let's infuse brain damage in a child so they can go to school. That's a great idea, So this is quite sinister because it has been revealed that there is intent to do this. So once I knew there was intent, I said, we have to stop this forthwith. And this comes from my wound. My wound is bona fide experience with someone who was dramatically damaged by vaccines.
Yeah. Now, how old was she when she got those vaccines?
Well, it was her annual checkup. You're going to not believe me when I tell you this. My mother was checking out of a hospital for an infection, and after I had my sisters with her round the clock to make sure they didn't vaccinate her while she was there, because they're constantly trying to vaccinate you in hospitals. And as someone said to my husband once, we don't always ask. he was going to be spending the night for a different reason, he checked out forthwith. They had tried to give him a vaccine 4 times within 2 hours in the emergency room, and he's like, you know what, I can't fight you off when I'm asleep, and if you don't always ask, I'm out of here, you know? But anyway, my mother, after she checked out, my sister finally had an opportunity to go to the bathroom. While she's in the bathroom, unattending my mother, who had checked out, someone in a white coat came over and gave my mother a pneumonia vaccine, and she had a stroke shortly thereafter. So I can't ask her which annual checkup. She can't answer that question.
I had no idea they even had a pneumonia vaccine.
Everything. In fact, there's legislation right now that is threatening our children that the health committee in the assembly passed, and it is to give children vaccines for sexually transmitted diseases without parental consent.
Right.
And I understand, yeah, right. And it's not just the ones that we know of that are associated with a sexually transmitted disease, which is the Hep B vaccine, which they give to children at birth, and children have died from, and no one ever gets arrested or goes to jail who caused that. And, of course, the HPV vaccine, which HPV, which is a cancer, was only known in middle-aged and above women. Now that they're giving it to teenagers, teenagers are getting HPV because it has been revealed that they intend to give the diseases they claim to prevent through Dr. Tomal Genovic's receipt of endless archive of material through the Freedom of Information Act, and it took her 7 years and a court order to get this when it should be a 20 to 30 day turnaround. So we know the intent is to give the diseases they claim to prevent.
Right.
But seizures are a very typical outcome from vaccines, and a stroke is like a dramatic form of seizure.
Yeah.
So here you go. I can't tell you which annual checkup because my mother had a stroke after a vaccine.
Right. It's so amazing. And then there's so many arguments that people will have to defend the vaccines, even after such a clear, you know, demarcation. Like, everything was fine until this point. It's like, oh, well, you know, maybe she was also had a cold at that time. And like, people...
Well, I'll be honest. When I said that to the people in the emergency room, there was a doctor and several nurses. Everybody looked really nervous, looked down, and just like scurried around and did function. They did not want to address that. They knew full well that what I was saying was quite legitimate by their reaction. Their reaction was one of ginormous nervousness, you know?
Exactly. So what are your next steps? I mean, I'm really, like I said, you're one of my champions on this issue. So what are your next steps? I know that you're very passionate in what you believe in right now. What do you plan to do?
Well, what I have done is I brought it to local legislators to create a resolution to ban vaccines. I've brought it to my state legislator. I said, since the hoax is over and has been revealed, I would like you to nullify the CDC vaccine schedule and pandemic laws, because the nullification takes place at the state level. And normally you would nullify, let's say, the NDAA. You would be nullifying a bill. But in this case, I'm asking them to nullify a schedule of a federal agency. So we'll see if that is possible. I don't see why it is not. I'm right now talking to the 10th Amendment Center about this exact issue. And then I've taken it to Representative Posey on Capitol Hill, who was the most informed and most outspoken at the autism hearings and most infuriated. He brought up the fact that we have the highest rate of infant mortality of 34 countries, and we give the most vaccines. And the country that has the lowest rate, Iceland, gives the least vaccine. he pointed out that the study that disassociates autism from vaccination was done by a man who was on the run and one of the 25 most wanted, Paul Thorson, for stealing. He's not on the run because of his study. Unfortunately, that's why he should be on the run. He's on the run because he stole research funds and, I guess, didn't produce anything. And he brought up a lot of important issues, and I thought, I'm going to sit in with him. And I met with his chief of staff, and this gentleman had also worked under Representative Weldon, who was a doctor prior to Representative Posey in the same district of Florida, and he had been researching vaccines for 14 years and absolutely led me to believe that they were going to sponsor my legislation. What resulted from that, I had given him a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study that had been conducted in Germany, and they then came out with a bill to conduct a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study, and I thought, we're just kicking the can down the road. If you are going to do such a study instead of sponsoring my bill, ban vaccines, which lists the ingredients, the diseases that result, and the intent to give those diseases, it's one page. It's one page. It's not a long bill because you can get all of that on one page. Of course, the more you know, the more concise you can be. And at this point, I know a lot. When I first wrote the bill, all vaccines are banned in 2009, I didn't know the ingredients, the diseases that resulted, and the intent. But I did know that a child who was given a vaccine went from normal to mentally retarded in one shot. And we didn't know which shot that was going to be, so we had to just stop them all. That's what I knew back then, just the reality of it. So anyway, I've asked Representative Posey to put a moratorium on vaccines because for 60 years, because we have been vaccinating, to my knowledge, for 60 years in this country on a regular basis, and the only way to get a comparison would be of unvaccinated would be to put a moratorium for the next 60 years. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, you know, because it's really funny. It's like you either have to, like, come at this issue really hard, you know, because trying to do it in a somewhat democratic thing, it's like, look, we're looking for at least people to have choice on if they vaccinate or not. Then it just leaves you in this loop where you're going around, doing the dance, and nothing ever happens. So you have to just hit them hard with, like, look, 60-year moratorium, that's it. And then the issue sort of comes to the surface. And then now with that, since you're coming, you know, straight ahead, like, this is what we want, do you feel that people will try to bargain you down from that?
Well, I don't know. I can't be bothered because, as I think I may have mentioned to you, we've been fighting, or not me, but autism parents have been fighting for a choice. We have a religious exemption in New York, which is uniquely difficult to attain. Of all the states, New York is the hardest. And we have a medical exemption, which doctors won't give. And even if they do give them, I understand that the health department has been known to go into schools and rip them off. Okay? So as far as I know, we only have one standing health medical exemption in the state of New York. Not to say that there weren't more given, but there's only one standing. So philosophical, where you don't have to write a letter and get it notarized and get a sheet from the nurse and then turn it in and then wait for them to let you know if your religious exemptions need their approval, okay, your religious convictions need their approval. A philosophical is just no thanks, because there's a wonderful bill right now wherein, that was unfortunately shot down for the third time. Representative Andrea Boland had recommended that doctors or healthcare workers have to reveal the ingredients within vaccines and then remind the parent that they have the right of refusal. And this was the lobbyists from the medical industry descended on the state Senate to prevent that from passing. but it had made it through the assembly for the first time. But we don't, I said to her, you know, this would be a wonderful plan B here. However, we don't have the right of refusal if you want your child to go to school. And I have been promoting homeschooling for those who cannot get religious exemption because, as I say, what's the use of dumbing a kid down to go to school? Right. What's the point?
Exactly. And these laws just make no sense at all because it's kind of like they want you to do something to your body. They want you to manipulate and sort of invade your body with something unforeign with no real justification on why. You know, it's like, what's the real concern here? Say if, you know, if I have a child and that child's not vaccinated, then it's up to me as a parent, it was my choice to send him to school unvaccinated. And if something happens, that's my responsibility, you know. And if everybody else is vaccinated, then there shouldn't be any concern at all. Then they all should be safe, apparently. And mine will be the weak one that is, you know, crippled or whatever by whatever this horrible, you know, chicken pox thing would do to me, you know. It's just, it's really so upsetting. And it's kind of like,
well, kids are getting the diseases they're being inoculated against. 97% of the children who have mumps have been given the mumps vaccine. Well over 80% of children who have whooping cough have been given the whooping cough vaccine. And the polio has been kept alive because of the polio vaccine. So the chicken pox is giving children shingles. The shingles vaccine is giving people chicken pox. It's the same viral component. And so everybody who's taking me, my father almost died from a flu shot, and he had never gotten vaccinated up until then, and he was in sparkling good health. He was literally never sick a day in his life, one flu shot, and he was in bed for months, and I really thought he was going to die. You know, it was really unbelievable. But I've had a lot of, you know, my pet almost died from vaccines, and after a $4,000 operation and canceling my life-awaited trip to Egypt to pay for this, I always equate the two. I'll save the dog over going to Egypt. But the fact of the matter is, after I paid the bill, I had been saying all along, he hasn't been able to sit since that vaccine, and now his throat is bubbling out, and now he's on death's door, and I think it's the vaccine, and oh, it couldn't be. After I paid that bill, I said to the lead surgeon, I said, so what do you think it was? And just before I got on the elevator, she said, the vaccines? Like, And I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. Isn't this funny? I'm just choking laughing about this.
Exactly. Well, you know, and that's why as a parent, like, you know, I know a lot of people will go back and forth on what to do. It's like, I'm so worried my kid won't be able to go to school. And, you know, and it shouldn't even come to that. I mean, your kid's going to school, that's one issue. Why does a school have the right to, or, you know, the state or whoever have the right to say, before your kid can attend these classes, they have to, you know, get circumcised and get this.
Right,
and get,
right,
you know,
right.
You know,
well, that's the fear-mongering. It's their lie, and they're sticking to it. It's worked so far. Lie has worked so far. Now, before we go on with vaccines, which is I spend so much time on air doing this, what other issues would you like to address? I want people to know what you talk about cell phones. You talk about people who are adopted being able to access their personal information. And what else?
Well, yeah, I mean, so basically, like, I'm the Green Party candidate for public advocate. One of my biggest things was, going back to my personal story for a bit, a clear example is I never voted in my life until I was about 35, is that right? Yeah, I think I was 35. The first time I voted was in 2000 when Ralph Nader was running. When I was growing up, I remember my adoptive mother telling me about, you know, Ralph Nader, you got to listen to this guy. He's really good, you know, because, he's a public advocate, you know, and he was pushing through legislation, you know, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, my life is coming around again. And he was, you know, always doing great things, pushing through legislation. And then during 2000, I had the pleasure to hear him at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, he was talking about, like, the, his reasons for running was the fact that he just couldn't push things through Congress anymore. Everybody's pockets were being filled with, you know, money on, like, you know, hey, here's a donation for whatever. Now, remember, don't push that bill through because that's going to be bad for business. You know, and so that's why I was actually drawn towards the Green Party at that time, because growing up in Harlem, you know, that's where I grew up. I didn't mention that earlier. I saw a lot of career politicians sort of come and go, or just some just come and stay and really not do anything for the community. It just seemed like, you know, they get elected, they make their rounds, they show up at parades and whatever, but nobody was ever doing anything. Nobody was ever enacting any legislation that made changes or doing any kind of programs that helped the community. And so early on, I was just like very turned off to the whole idea of participating in that process. Ironically, after high school, I enlisted into the Army. You know, I went because high school was like kind of a weird time. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I needed direction. And, you know, I had some friends that were enlisting, and, you know, the Army had this great program. If you get your friends to enlist, that friend will get like a stripe when he graduates basic training. So the whole joke of that was my friend enlisted me and another guy, and then the initial friend didn't even make it in. So like me and this other guy stuck in the Army.
Oh my word. Oh, yeah.
It was so sad. But during that time, it just gave me some more time to think about the process and just certain things that I just needed time to think. I needed time to grow up. I needed time for some discipline. And when I got out of the Army, I started working and, you know, attending protests, attending things I cared about, but I still never participated in the political process, you know, because no matter what, at the end of the day, it seemed like everybody that was campaigning just did not have that integrity to sort of stay the course of what they were preaching on the campaign trail. You know, they're like, yeah, I'm for this. But then when the going got tough, they would just back down. So going back to my Ralph Nader experience in 2000, I was like, oh, my God, here's a guy that no matter what rocks get thrown at him, he continues to try to fight the good fight. And I have so much respect for him, and I was drawn to that. And I was drawn to the Green Party because I was like, oh, my God, and here's a party that actually has values and you know, platforms that actually make sense, and all the candidates that run for the Green Party actually hold true to those values. So a lot of the value, for example, is, you know, I'm big on nonviolence. You know, everybody sort of preaches nonviolence, but what does that mean? You know, nonviolence for me, it starts in the local communities. You know, you turn on the news, you can't even watch it for more than 5 minutes without, like, hearing about, like, 12 shootings going on or people getting mugged or, you know, attacked or whatever. It's like always been surrounded by violence, and I've always been trying to understand why.
Are you there?
Hello? Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you here?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, sorry. My phone just did a weird thing.
Well, you have two more minutes, and I really want you to say as succinctly as you can at this point what it is you're hoping to accomplish if you become the public advocate of New York City.
Great, yeah, because as you can see, I'll go into my whole life story on things. I have to really stop that. But really what I want to do as public advocate is I want to take away these hidden barriers that, like, if you ask anybody in the street, hey, you're running for public advocate, what does that position do? Exactly, that's the problem. You're a public advocate should be out there talking to the communities, trying to organize communities, in my opinion, organize communities that feel positive about reaching out to the public advocate office to help push through legislation that helps improve those communities, especially communities that have been neglected over the years because, for whatever reason, we're trying to put all our focus on bringing more tourism to New York City, So we want to make sure that, you know, the Times Square area is nice and it has bike lanes and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time that they're doing all this, then people that help to run the city, people that live in the boroughs, like Staten Island and Queens and Brooklyn and, you know, the Bronx,